Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spotlight Middle East. I am Rahshan Saglam and I will be your host today. Twin bomb explosion targets the Iranian embassy in the Lebanese capital Beirut on Tuesday. Nearly two dozen people have been killed and over 140 others injured. The blasts were caused by two suicide bombers, and it is obvious that the target was the Iranian embassy. A lot of condemnations and more accusations. Who, how, and why? We will be answering those questions and analyzing the bomb blast that targeted the Iranian embassy in Beirut during our episode. And we will speak about the Syrian military operations and developments in Syria with our guest and one of our best strategic analysts, General Elias Farhat. Hello and welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Thank you for being with us in the show. And first of all, we will send our condolences to the families of the martyrs and victims of the twin blast that targeted the Iranian embassy. And we wish the injured speed recovery from the injuries that happened to them due to those blasts. First of all, who is targeted from this blast? Is it the Iranian embassy? Is it the whole neighborhood? Is it the resistance? Who's the target?
From the material perspective, the Iranian embassy was targeted in this terrorist attack. But from the political perspective, the axis of resistance in the region was really targeted and received a bloody message from the Qaeda and all its affiliates and supporters. Yet we can consider that this terrorist attack is in the series of the
targeting the resistance,
targeting resistance, and in the series of the battlefield in Syria, because you know that Hezbollah, supported by Iran, is now taking part in the fight in Syria. Why Hezbollah is taking part in this fight? First of all, because before Hezbollah declared that will
it
take
is
part.
Fighting against
we have heard a lot of ultimatums and threats from the leaders of the of the armed opposition in Syria that the final target for them is Hezbollah and the resistance, and they promised Hezbollah with a great sentence when they topple the regime, and when the regime falls. So the danger of the armed opposition against Hezbollah was very obvious, and it was told by the leaders of the armed opposition. But it became serious when Jabhat al-Nusra and Daesh dominated the armed opposition, which both organizations are affiliated to Al-Qaeda, and they report to Mr. al-Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda, the international Al-Qaeda. So Hezbollah is taking part in this fight, and the fight is between the is going on between the Syrian army, supported by Hezbollah, and the Qaeda.
And militant groups supported by foreign countries. But if you want to speak about this explosion in particular, it targeted the Iranian embassy. But the previous explosions that targeted Beirut were targeting Hezbollah and a stronghold of Hezbollah, which is Dahiyeh and Beirut suburbs. It is a stronghold for Hezbollah, but this time it is targeting an embassy, a foreign embassy in Lebanon. Why the Iranian embassy in particular? Is it because Iran is always defending the Syrian regime and standing by the Syrian regime?
Yes, from the crime scene, we noticed that the guy who was on the motorcycle was aiming at blowing himself up and open the door,
so that the other car.
So the other car will enter inside
the gate and
inside the embassy and will blow up there in a building or something like this, and will cause a lot of casualties in. And the
luckily they were not able to do so.
Yes, yes. Fortunately, they were confronted by the guards mm-hmm. and the explosion took place
at the gate.
At the gate, mm-hmm. and which caused the death and the injury of a lot of civilians, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. people who are in their shops.
Unfortunately.
Or mm-hmm. are walking. Or in
and
the,
citizens
the
living in a it is a residential area.
It's a residential area, and the Iranian embassy, unlike Western embassies, they did mm-hmm. not cut the road. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They kept the road open.
Because if we see the Saudi Arabian embassy, if you look at that is in Beirut, located in Beirut, it cut the road all around the Saudi
they
embassy.
Cut the road.
All of the embassies do that.
The Saudi and the French, the American, mm-hmm. a lot of embassies mm-hmm. do that. But the Iranian embassy didn't do anything like this and didn't cut the road because mm-hmm. it's a vital road for the mm-hmm. people. So. Had they cut the road, they could have prevented this mm-hmm. attack. But a lot of people are walking and
from
driving.
From the crime scene, do you think that who commit this suicide bombing, they know very well the area and they know the gates of? We know that there are several gates of the Iranian embassy. They know the gates and they were targeting a specific area or specific gate in the Iranian embassy.
I think before the two suicide bombers come to the embassy, mm-hmm. there was a reconnaissance mm-hmm. to the embassy. To prepare to see how the gate and mm-hmm. The sentries around the gates and in a tour. According to this reconnaissance, mm-hmm. The plan was put mm-hmm. in order to storm in the gate and mm-hmm. then let the four-wheel drive car mm-hmm.
enter the gate. You're a military man. How do you think this car was prepared? Do you think that it came to Lebanon through the borders, or do you think that it was prepared for explosion inside Lebanon?
I think both cases are mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it was prepared outside Lebanon or in Syria mm-hmm. or inside Lebanon.
Now we answered how, and we're going to answer why. Why is the Iranian embassy targeted and why now? Because we and Hezbollah and the Lebanese army and all intelligence, Lebanese intelligence, were expecting that something might happen in Dahiya area and Beirut suburbs during the Muharram or during the 10 days of Muharram, and nothing happened. Why now? Why after Muharram? Why after the 10 days of Muharram?
I think there were many plans to blow up people, mm-hmm. suicide bombers or cars in the Dahiya or in other places, but the tough security measures.
There were fears
and,
of that.
In Dahiya during the Ashura, mm-hmm. I think they prevented any entrance of such mm-hmm. suicide bombers, and the security services and the army mm-hmm. Succeeded in preventing any explosion in Ashura. Mm-hmm. But as to the Iranian embassy, it is a target because now Iran is on the spotlight for the negotiations with the 5+1 group, mm-hmm. international group, and in the Geneva 2 conference for the Syrian crisis. Mm-hmm. Also, Iran is a regional player, and effectively a regional player, and having the planners decided to enter to the embassy and mm-hmm. Make a great
cause casualties.
Which will make a shock in Iran. Mm-hmm. This is what was their aim, but they didn't realize what they were planning to.
Now the main question is who? Who is behind it? We've seen a lot of condemnations. The former Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri condemned the terrorist attack. Lebanese President condemned it. Syrian Minister of Information accused Israel and Persian Gulf countries to be behind it. Everyone is accusing Israel, Ministry of Information in Lebanon, Minister of Defense in Lebanon. Everyone accused Israel. Who is behind that? Is it Israel, Persian Gulf countries? Who is behind that attack?
I think Israel is not far away from what's going on in Syria and mm-hmm. in Lebanon. and the Takfiris and the Qaeda is not far from Israel in terms mm-hmm. of their mutual interests.
It is an arm for Israel and yes, Syria.
They have the mutual interest in threatening the resistance in Lebanon, the Syrian regime, Iran, and as well. So far, we heard that Mr. Siraj al-Din Zuraikat, mm-hmm. on his account in Twitter, wrote that the battalions of Abdullah Azzam mm-hmm. are responsible, claimed responsibility on this attack. Mm-hmm. And he determined two reasons for this attack. The first one is demanding the Hezbollah to withdraw from Syria. Mm-hmm. The second one is to release the Islamist held in the prisoners in Lebanon. If this was right, mm-hmm. and they are the people affiliated to the Qaeda who did it, so that means that this explosion is, we can put it in the course of the Syrian combat, mm-hmm. Syrian fighting now, especially after the Syrian army have gained a lot mm-hmm. of progresses on the ground and
in countryside, the area of Kalamun and what's happening countryside, now we're going to speak
countryside,
about this.
Damascus, Kalamun, mm-hmm. and Aleppo in the mm-hmm. north.
Okay, I'm going to read something that a Jerusalem Post wrote directly after the explosion, which draws some suspicions, and it has a relation, it draws suspicions about the relation of Israel to this explosion. Jerusalem Post said Iranian cultural attaché to Lebanon among those killed, no information about that. Sources says 146 injured in blast reportedly caused by suicide bomber car bomb. Hezbollah vows to continue in all its effort to defeat Israel and the terrorists. Why did the Jerusalem Post mention Hezbollah in this info or in this news about the car bomb? It's a random news about the car bomb that targeted an Iranian embassy in Lebanon, and it mentioned Hezbollah that vows to continue its all efforts to defeat Israel. Why would it mention Hezbollah and something that has to do with the Iranian embassy and explosion that targeted the embassy?
I understand that you mean why the Jerusalem Post mm-hmm. mentioned that Hezbollah declared that they want to defeat Israel. Mm-hmm. This, we can put it in the course of the Israeli threat against Hezbollah and against Iran. Mm-hmm. You know that Israel opposed the draft agreement between Iran and the 5+1 mm-hmm. international group, and threatened to attack Iran by itself. A British newspaper published that there was a meeting between Bandar bin Sultan and the mm-hmm. chief of Mossad, and their coordination that the Saudi Arabia will open its skies to the Israeli warplanes in mm-hmm. order to cross it and attack the nuclear sites in Iran. Mm-hmm. Then we heard that before attacking Iran, they want to invade Lebanon and mm-hmm. to get rid of Hezbollah. So in this course of threatening Iran and threatening mm-hmm. Hezbollah, it comes here, the story of Jerusalem Post mm-hmm. that Hezbollah
to
wants to defeat Lebanon.
To link between the two incidents. Okay, we are going to continue about the bomb blast that targeted the Iranian embassy, General Elias Farhad, but before we are going to a brief break and we will be back, dear viewers. We were speaking before the break, General Farhat, about the bomb blast that targeted the Iranian embassy. And we want to know, is it a message to Iran? And what would that message be if it is?
It is a bloody message to Iran mm-hmm. that the Qaeda affiliates and the countries or people or figures, public figures who
behind those
are ready to continue their battle against Iran in the style of suicide bombers, perhaps here in Lebanon, maybe in Iran itself. We have heard about a lot of
rumors about that.
Rumors about that in Baluchistan area, and but in addition to that, the fighting itself, which is going on in Syria, between the Syrian army and Hezbollah from one side and the Qaeda groups from the other side, is also a battlefield for this day. This message means that they will continue supporting the Al-Qaeda groups in Syria against the Syrian army.
Okay, why did they choose the Iranian embassy in Beirut? They could have chosen the Iranian embassy anywhere else if they wanted to send a message to Iran.
I think because the sovereignty of Lebanon is very weak. Because if you targeted the Iranian embassy in Saudi Arabia or in Kuwait, that will be a great violation to the sovereignty of the hosting country.
And we would see great condemnations
but
to that.
In Lebanon, there is no problem with the sovereignty.
And we've been witnessing a lot of
blasts. It is violated
So daily. This twin blast happened because of the Syrian crisis and because of Hezbollah acting in Syria. Do you think that Iran would back off and stop defending the Syrian regime after those blasts?
From a humanitarian point of view, the blast caused casualties and caused sorrow and sympathy with the family of the victims. But from the operational point of view, the blast failed to enter the inside the embassy. So now today and tomorrow, it's not good to talk about operational point of view and to neglect.
It is a humanitarian.
It's a humanitarian.
It's going to be a humanitarian issue for all of us. And we wanted, I want to say that we wanted to show a video for the blast, but due to the cruelty of the images, we could not show any of those images because it's a humanitarian thing, and we did not want to show this.
Respecting
to our viewers.
The feelings of the families of the victims.
Of course, this is what we were trying to do. The first two bombs targeted Hezbollah. Do you think that who committed those bombs is the same one who committed the twin blasts in front of the Iranian embassy?
I think the there is a boss for all, but the style is different.
This type of bombings, the twin ones, we've seen in Syria and in Iraq.
Yes, a twin with suicide bombers. Both is a Qaeda style, and maybe the two explosions in Dahiyeh, in Bir al-Abd and in Ruwais, so far the investigations did not
show a suicide bomber.
It was a serial suicide bomber, and the another four-wheel drive Cherokee that was discovered. Full of explosives
and ready to be exploded.
Yes, was parked and nobody was inside it. So that means there is a difference in the style.
It's from afar. The ones in Dahiyeh are from a far distance. Explosions from a remote control.
Remote control and the same both of in Tripoli as well. The explosions in Tripoli are look like the explosions in Dahiyeh.
Could it be because the message should be stronger and should have a better effect? Could it be
I think this this attack on the Syria on the Iranian embassy is more is not regional only, international message to Iran. While the car bombs in Tripoli and in
Dahiyeh,
which I believe that the same doer, the same side perpetrated this, are from a regional.
Okay, you said that it is all related to the Syrian crisis. If we want to say what's happening now in Syria, and Hezbollah is still acting alongside with the Syrian government, it is acting in, say, the Zainab area, it is acting in Homs area, is it acting in Kalamun area, which is we're all hearing in the media, and everyone is speaking about the Kalamun battle that is taking place. And we want to say to our viewers, Kalamun is not a small area, it is not Qusair, and and this is what you're going to explain to us as being a strategic analyst. I know that you know all about it. It is at the Lebanese borders. It is a very sensitive area, and it's going to be a very sensitive battle. What can you tell us about
Yes,
Kalamoun?
Yes, first of all, before start talking about Kalamoun, I want to draw your attention that the Syrian crisis is not a domestic crisis. Mm-hmm. Since March 2011, the first slogans that and the protesters and the demonstrations mm-hmm. was against Iran and Hezbollah, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm.
Asking
for reform.
One.
It's not asking for reforms or mm-hmm. Changing the regime. It was against Hezbollah and Iran, which means that the Syrian crisis is not a Syrian only a Syrian crisis. Mm-hmm. It's a regional crisis.
And it's not a sectarian one as well.
It's not a sectarian mm-hmm. one. Otherwise, we could have seen more something different mm-hmm. if it was sectarian. Mm-hmm. In some of its faces, we can see it's sectarian. But mm-hmm. as a whole, it's not a sectarian. It's a political conflict between mm-hmm. two sides, the resistance side and the other mm-hmm. Side. Let's go back to Kalamoun. Mm-hmm. Kalamoun is a name for a region, mm-hmm. not for a city. Mm-hmm. There is a city, Kalamoun, in North Lebanon.
It's
different from mm-hmm. a small town on the coast south of Tripoli. But Kalamoun is a region, mountainous region mm-hmm. In western of Syria, which mm-hmm. It's really the western side of the Syrian mountain
east mountains that link between Lebanon and Syria, actually separate between Lebanon and Syria.
The line of summits mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. the border between Syria mm-hmm. and Lebanon. The western side is Kalamoun, the eastern side mm-hmm. near Ersal.
So it is a mountainous area, and there is a valley, as I know.
Yes, there mm-hmm. there are valleys, mm-hmm. not one valley, mm-hmm. a lot of valleys. It starts from Kara and Jrejir, mm-hmm. Then to Yabrud, Dair Atiyye, Nabek.
And we know that those are strongholds for the militant groups that are working in Syria now.
Yes.
But we heard that this week the Syrian army was able to take over Kara area, which is an area that is a really important one, so that they go into the whole Kalamoun area, right?
Yes, this is the start up of the Battle of Kalamoun mm-hmm. was from the north mm-hmm. In Kara. Kara, because it is the nearest town in the Kalamoun mm-hmm. to the highway between Damascus and Homs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now the highway
is open.
Mm-hmm. And the others, Deir Atiyye and Yabrud and Nabek are on the east side of mm-hmm. the highway. I think that Kara is also the most difficult mm-hmm. town of the Kalamoun. Mm-hmm. The situation in Yabrud and Ain Atiyye and Nabek, I think, will be easier for the Syrian army. Mm-hmm. I predict that they will fall quickly mm-hmm. in the hands of the Lebanese of the Syrian army, mm-hmm. the others, because most of them were relying on Kara, that will be a stronghold and mm-hmm. resist mm-hmm. months or weeks or months. So when it falls within 48 hours, mm-hmm. that means the others will see it's not useful for them mm-hmm. to resist. But
since
as far as I heard from the media, that one reporter saw about 160 pickups full mm-hmm. of men that went from Kara to Jrejir, mm-hmm. which is a town in.
So they are moving from a city to another.
And I think from Jrejir they will enter Lebanon, mm-hmm. and then that will be a big problem to the Lebanese people.
Because we have at the borders the area of Ersal, right in Lebanon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this area have been witnessing a lot of problems when it comes to armed groups, and we've witnessed armed groups going to this area to have a shelter and then go back to Syria to fight against the regime.
I don't think that they will go back, but when they enter Lebanon as the refugees, mm-hmm. The fighters will not stand still. Mm-hmm. They will mm-hmm. do anything. And given that the refugees in Ersal are double mm-hmm. the people of Ersal mm-hmm. that makes a
it's
case.
It's a problem for the city.
For the people mm-hmm. of Ersal before mm-hmm. others. Mm-hmm. Of course, that will that means that they will need relief mm-hmm. From all the international and the local donors.
Mm-hmm. But the UNHCR but, maybe and those but organizations.
But and from the other side, but when you have double of the people mm-hmm. That will cause a security
especially those
troubles.
Who are militants and fighters
yes,
fighting over
security
there.
Troubles and security mm-hmm. problems and they will dominate the mm-hmm. the city and they will do what
and if you want to speak of the, about the city of Ersal politically it is we know that it is related to some figures in Lebanon so do you think that the people of Ersal will welcome those fighters
I don't think so mm-hmm. Yesterday the one of I think one of daily newspaper published that the mayor of Ersal, Mr. Hujairi, mm-hmm. Refused to receive
any more refugees
but
or fighters.
The, his cousin Sheikh Mustafa Hujairi opposed him and insisted that they want to receive
host
all the people to host all the people, even mm-hmm. the fighters of them. But now. Given that 160 pickups, imagine that they enter Ersal
full
of men and armed men, mm-hmm. that will change the situation dramatically.
Mm-hmm. And in the whole area, and in Lebanon, of course, because those fighters are coming to Lebanon, they're going to act in Lebanon, not only
in Lebanon,
take a shelter.
When they are in Ersal, there is one way from Ersal to Labwe, mm-hmm. the Lebanese army is deployed on this road and the checkpoints can arrest them because of sneaking to the Lebanese
what is the role of the Lebanese army in Al Qalamoun battle?
As far as we heard last week that the army deployed two companies in the area to prevent illegal entry
mm-hmm.
to Lebanon. But I don't think that was effective because it's 70 kilometers
the borders
between Ersal and Syria, 70 kilometers, and two companies are not enough to cover mm-hmm. all this area.
However, the interior minister in Lebanon have said that it is going to deploy more army personnel or more policemen in this area so that they prevent the fleeing of fighters from this area.
I don't think that they can succeed in preventing people and fighter to come from Syria to Lebanon, mm-hmm. but at least they can prevent them to come to move from Ersal to inside
to other
Lebanon.
Areas.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
because they can control the area around Ersal mm-hmm. in the Lebanese and in the west side
by
of Ersal.
By creating checkpoints,
and patrols the mm-hmm. area well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we will go back to the battle in Qalamoun. Yeah. If the Syrian army wanted to control the area, we need to know a timing. Can we have a time frame for this battle? We know that it is a big area, it's not
look,
a small area.
I can expect, based on the balance of power mm-hmm. between the two sides, that the Syrian army can enter Yabrud, Deir Ati, Nabak within 2 weeks, mm-hmm. not more. Mm-hmm. But as to the high places as Rankous and Asal mm-hmm. al-Ward, and then southwards to Zabadani and the mm-hmm. That needs another step. It mm-hmm. will be another step.
Okay. We are going to another short break and we will continue speaking about it and we will see a brief report as well about the situation in Syria. Dear viewers, a break and we will be back.
In recent weeks, the Syrian army has made fresh advances in its fight against foreign-backed militants. These achievements caused the outrage of extremists, who targeted at least 31 Syrian troops after a bomb blast rocked an army base near the capital, Damascus. Three generals and a brigadier general were among 31 troops killed in a bomb attack that caused a building in the army transport base in Harasta to collapse. The terrorist mortar attacks continue to claim more innocent lives in Damascus. as a number of mortar shells hit Sunday various areas in the city and countryside, causing the martyrdom of 8 citizens and the injury of scores of others. A source at Damascus Police Command said a mortar shell that landed near al-Sheikh Raslan Mosque in Bab Touma neighborhood killed 3 citizens and wounded 15 others, including children, referring also to 17 other citizens who were also injured by a mortar shell that hit their bus in al-Sheikh Raslan area. Syrian Arab forces are now preparing to take the battle against foreign-backed fighters to Al-Qalamun area, which is situated between Damascus lowland and the plateau of Homs, consisting of a number of mountains, hills and highland facing southwest-northeast and adjoining to Lebanon's eastern mountain series from one side and the Syrian semi-desert from the other. Fierce battles are expected to be taking place there. On the other hand, Lavrov called for the presence of Iran and Saudi Arabia in Geneva II International Peace Conference on the crisis in Syria, as they are 2 key regional players, saying, "We believe this circle should be expanded," because Iran and Saudi Arabia were not present at the first conference last year. The date of the event has changed many times, as the foreign-backed opposition remains divided over attending the talks. The Syrian government has agreed to take part in the talks but has rejected preconditions for any insistence on the departure of President Assad.
General Farhad, we've seen in the report how the Syrian army is gaining control over a lot of areas. What are those areas now in Syria that the Syrian army have control on?
First of all, in countryside Damascus, the Syrian army made a good progress in Sid Zainab area, Beit Saham and Babila.
The whole area around the airport road.
Yes, and the airport road and the Suwaida road. Sid Zainab go to the Suwaida road, but and Shiba is on the highway to the airport. Now there are still the eastern part of the Ghouta, which is Erbin, Zamalka,
those are strongholds for the armed groups.
And Douma. The Douma is the capital of
those areas, countryside
Damascus. Is still under the control of the militants, but gaining control on all these areas, and especially Sibina, Hijera, Babila, Beit Saham. They surrendered.
We've seen a lot of fighters and armed groups
Saham, surrendering. They made an agreement with the people, so the fighters surrendered and the
they army think that they are surrendering because they know that they lost the battle so far.
I think so, because you know, from the political side, what the fighters when they entered the fight, when they started to fight, they were fully believing that the regime will fall, and there will be no more Assad in the power. But now, when they see that President Assad will
stay in power, we've witnessing regional agreements
between the United States and Russia, and the Geneva II, the Syrian government with their delegation and the opposition, another delegation. That means they said in a personal revision, what are we doing now? It is a lie that the regime will
fall.
Will fall, and we'll change the regime and we'll control the next phase in Syria. There is no next phase, and there is no hope from this fight, so
maybe there will be negotiations only. What about Aleppo now? What's the situation of Aleppo and
Aleppo,
the Syrian army?
Since the fall of Safira, which is a very important strategic city, in first of all because it's close to the research centers and a lot of stores of the Syrian army, strategic weapons and something like this. The Safira is three times Qusair, and it was occupied by thousands of militants from Jamaat al-Nusra and Daesh. When the Syrian army entered Safira, it was a shock in the militants of, in the north. They were relying that Safira will not fall easily, even if Hezbollah or the Syrian army or Iranian army or anything like this.
Hezbollah did interfere in Safira.
I think the Hezbollah is taking part as advisors more than fighters, because there are a lot of fighters in Syria, but advisors and experts, they are very useful
in such battles.
Yes, yes. So, and then they controlled the area of Brigade 80, which is a great park also, defends the airport of Aleppo, which is now its road is open and
what
secure.
What about Homs?
Homs now, the 80% of Homs is under the control of the government forces. There are still the small quarters in downtown Homs and Karabis and Baba Houd. And, there are a lot of people and militants there. I think that the Minister of Reconciliation, Dr. Ali Haidar, is exerting great efforts in order to convince those people to surrender. With some guarantees or something like this, and in other areas as well. So if it is ended in peacefully, that will be much better than to storm in this.
Of course, we all want the peaceful solution for the Syrian crisis, because it's 2 years of fighting, and fighting does not lead to anywhere. It's only the dialogue, political dialogue, that would solve that crisis. If you want to speak politically, now we spoke strategically, and we know that the Syrian army have a lot of areas under its control. If we want to speak politically, some political analysts are speaking that Saudi Arabia has one shot to prove that the armed groups can regain control over certain areas in Syria, so that they go to Geneva to stronger. Is it that true?
I think they were aiming this, but it was the opposite to what their aims. They were aiming at occupying more areas and exerting more pressure on the regime.
But Bandar bin Sultan has asked
for another
shot.
But what happened is that they lost. They are losing more.
Do you think that they're going to try again and again? Because we've heard that political analysts are saying that Bandar bin Sultan asked the U.S. for another trial or another shot to try to give the militants more weapons and more advanced weapons, and to send more fighters under an Islamic name, to send more fighters through the Jordanian borders to go into Syria and regain control over
From
other areas. Is it true?
That if you want to build an army, the army of Muhammad or army of Islam, or whatever his name, that needs at least 1 or 2 years in order to build this army. And I don't think that the United States or the international community
are going to wait that much.
I'm going to wait Bandar bin Sultan to construct this army.
But some political analysts or strategic analysts are speaking that this army is already going to Jordan by now, and it is it was already trained and is now in Jordan, and it's going to flee from the Jordanian borders.
I think it's
under an agreement with Jordan.
It's a dangerous game. Okay, we are aware that Jordan is under a great pressure from Saudi Arabia and from the GCC countries in order to allow the arms position and to use its borders to attack Syria. But when it comes to a large scale attack, I think that Jordan itself will be a target to the Syrian missiles or the Syrian military operations as well, because that means it will be a war between
it's
Jordan.
It's not going to be easy.
It's not infiltration of some people, 50 or 100.
They're speaking about a large number.
A large
of
number
fighters.
That means there's an army want to invade. So then it is allowed to the Syrian army to use all its available means in order to defend itself.
If you want to speak about Geneva II and what is happening now in Geneva II, some people and politicians are saying that it is going to be by the end of this year, and some others are saying that it is going to be postponed till 2014 and maybe in summer 2014. What do you think about that?
First of all, I don't think so. I don't think that Geneva will be convened in the meantime in next month or something like this. The main problem of Geneva II is the delegation of the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Who will represent the opposition? Up till now, the United States does not have a decision mm-hmm. who will represent the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition is made up of three main forces.
Major
coalition. The coalition, mm-hmm. the Istanbul
the Council.
National Security mm-hmm. Council, and the coordination committees in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
So. The coordination committees in Syria, they do not agree with the other two sides.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They do not agree to for any foreign intervention in
mm-hmm,
Syria,
mm-hmm.
And they don't agree to topple for Assad to leave
to be
before.
Toppled. Mm-hmm.
So
they are okay with having a negotiation with the president.
So the coalition and the National Security National Syrian Council.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same aims, so it is difficult to put the three in one.
In one delegation. Or in one hand.
In one hand, mm-hmm. or the chief of delegation will mm-hmm. Speak in on behalf of mm-hmm. them of all.
Mm-hmm.
So the committee of coordination will not accept at any circumstances that mm-hmm. Mr. Jorba will talk in their name. And now
we've seen conflict between Jorba and the Free Syrian Army representative and spokesman Luay Muqdad. We've seen them conflicting among each other, and there were some conflict, but they hit each other or something like that.
Yes, this is an evidence of the chaos in the
mm-hmm. and the opposition.
And the opposition all of itself, because Mr. Salim Idris, the chief of staff of the FSA, Free mm-hmm. Syrian Army, and I don't know if he is a general, two-star general, and the leader is a colonel,
mm-hmm.
the leader is colonel, and the chief of staff is the two-star general, and he is, I don't think how he thinks. He said he accused Mr. President Putin and Minister Lavrov of receiving bribery from Rami Makhlouf,
mm-hmm.
which is something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And now I heard him yesterday declaring that Kalmun is not important strategically for them. And
so they have conflicts among each other.
They have conflict. Mm-hmm. They are short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And another problem also as well is the who will represent the opposition on the ground.
The armed groups that are
the armed groups
on the ground,
are related to Ayman al-Zawahiri.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Would Ayman al-Zawahiri represent them in Geneva too?
Yes, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Suppose that the Geneva convened now and they
mm-hmm.
want to reach a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
So the one
who's going to call for a ceasefire? Who's going to call the opposition groups? And are they going
to
answer?
No, yes. Ayman al-Zawahiri is able to
mm-hmm.
make a ceasefire, mm-hmm. but all these, Mr. Jorba and Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Sabra and the others, are not able for imposing any ceasefire.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, our time is up, General Ilyas Farhat. Thank you so much for the great information that you gave us strategically.
Yeah.
And of course, dear viewers, we once again send our deep condolences to the victims and families of victims of the twin bomb blast that targeted the Iranian embassy in Beirut. Thank you so much for being in this with the show. And we know that you were ill and you just had an operation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dear viewers, thank you for watching. I'll see you next week.